So, a little bit about how things will go today. We'll do a little, about 30 minutes of meditation. I like to take a little short break so that people can move their bodies a little bit between meditation and the talk. So we'll take like 1 or 2 minutes to just grab some water, do whatever you need to do. And then I'll give a short talk, leaving plenty of time for questions, answers, whatever you want to bring in to the conversation. And does that seem to work for everybody? Does that sound good? So I want to invite you to find a comfortable position, one that you can settle into that allows you to feel supported and steady. And just take a moment to arrive into this space and arrive into your body. Notice your posture. Are there any places that are tight that maybe feel like they need some extra attention? And I want to invite you to just begin to find a sensation that you can connect to. Some sense that you don't have to control or create, that you can just connect to. Maybe it's the feel of the clothes on your skin, or the weight of your seat. Maybe it's a sound that you hear. Perhaps a smell that you smell. Just something that you can connect to that is steady and present. Other people find that they can connect to their breath best. Whatever it is, something that you can return to. Your mind will think that's what they do. So I want to invite you to just try to not control that. Allow yourself to think. You just don't have to follow the thought. And just return to the sensation, to that sensescape. Settle into your experience of this moment. The experience of what it's like to be you right now. In this body, in this place, at this time. There's nothing that needs to be done. You can just be in this space. So we'll sit quietly for about 30 minutes. returning again, the physical sensation, the physicality of our experience. I invite you cultivate some curiosity. What's it like to be me in this moment? Outside of the stories, ideas, and opinions I have about myself, what's it like underneath all of those? What's the nature of my experience? In this moment, in this place, see if you can notice something new, something quiet, underneath all the noise. What's it like to be you? Without your ideas or opinions, just connecting to the physical, to this moment, this body mind. What's it like to be you? Thank you very much for your practice. So I'm going to start by reading a small poem by W.S. Merwin. I believe in the ordinary day that is here at this moment and is me. I do not see it going its own way, but I never saw how it came to me. It extends beyond whatever I may think I know, and all that is real to me. It is the present that it bears away. Where has it gone when it is gone from me? There is no place I know outside today, except for the unknown all around me. The only presence that appears to stay. Everything that I call mine is lent me, even the way that I believe the day, for as long as it is here and is me. I want to talk a little bit today about curiosity. Early on, when I first started practicing Zen, I came across a quote from Suzuki Roshi, who started the San Francisco Zen Center. And it said that he said, the secret to Zen is two words, not always so. I'm enough of a smartass that I thought that was hysterically funny at the moment. And I still do. Because what it really is this invitation that I think we don't get a lot in our lives, but an invitation to curiosity, an invitation to not be so sure of what we think we know. You know, I am now 55. And I like to think sometimes that I know things. I get invited to talk to people and places and because other people think I know things, which is great, right? And it's so important that I not be so convinced about the things that I think I know. A lot of times when I'm practicing meditation, a thought will arise in my head. Some idea that I have, some story that maybe I think I know something. And when I'm really practicing, I can begin to ask myself, is that so? Is that true in this moment? Even the things that I think about myself from before. I remember somewhere around, I guess I was in my late 30s, early 40s, I started, and it was before I moved into San Francisco Zen Center, before I started training as a monk, I started to question what my gender was. I had a lot of friends who finally were able to find their way into their identity as a trans person or as a non-binary person, and began to have language about that, which then made me think, well, what about me? I know that I also, in my early 20s, questioned a lot about gender, partially because I wanted to figure out what kind of gay man I wanted to be, right? Like, there's all kinds of ways to be gay. There's all kinds of ways to be queer. And so I really wanted to understand what kind of man I wanted to be. And I recognized in my 20s that I got to make a choice about that. That I had been sold a bunch of stuff as a child that wasn't necessarily true once I understood myself to be queer. And I also understood that I had an opportunity now to really define for myself what kind of person I was. So at that time, I sort of settled on this idea of man, right? And then in my late 30s, early 40s, I started to question that just to, because I really wanted to think about, was that true for me, or was it something that I thought made the most sense or something? And so I began to sort of just ask myself, is that so? Is that so? Is that so? I was also doing a lot of unpacking and deconstructing work around some of the religious trauma I got as a kid, but also my own commitments to white supremacy and patriarchy and all of those things. And trying to sort of really not be so convinced by these things that I thought I knew. or that I thought were certain. Gender, sexuality, the kinds of people that I was attracted to, the kinds of people I wanted to spend time with, the kinds of things that I like to do. And I really started to just kind of ask myself, is that so? Is that so? And so now, even now, when I'm practicing and some idea comes in my mind about something that I think I know, particularly around if I think I know something about Buddhism, or I think I know something about Zen, can I not be so sure? Can I practice this not always so? And cultivate a kind of curiosity, cultivate the ability to kind of look underneath what was given to me by society, by the queer community, by myself, by all the people, right? Even, you know, I go to school, and even by my teachers in school, what is it that I believe? And can my beliefs not be shrouded in certainty? But can I cultivate a sort of curiosity about even those things that I think I know? Today, I know that I'm a cis man. But I'm not so certain that if that were to change at some point in the future, I would be thrown off, or it would be a totally foreign concept to me. Even the ways in which I relate to things like my gender or my identity or my queerness or my practice, you know, when I started practice in 1995, I related to it in such a different way than I do now. Part of that's because my body doesn't work the same way it did in 1995, and I've had to make adjustments to the ways in which I practice, right? So it's not so easy for me to do a ton of bowing anymore. I have to bow a little less all at one go. I can still do it, but I got to bow a little less. You know, I have to be really mindful of, like, I can't sit, like I used to be able to sit like all day, you know, into the night and stay up 24/7 and, you know, on these long retreats and do these things and be really excited by them and energized. And not so much anymore. I really like to sleep now. All these ideas that I have about what it means to practice, what it means to be a Buddhist, what it means to be a Zen priest, what it means to be a monk, what it means to be queer, are up for debate. But it's not a debate with other people. It's a debate with myself. Is this true for me? Right? Because it's not about something outside of this skin bag that's helping me form these ideas. It's really about coming closer and closer and closer into relationship to what's really the nature of my experience. What's it like to be me? I was in Texas last month giving some talks and visiting my family, and it was unbearably hot and super humid. And I was teaching at a Zen center, which means I had to put on my robes and look this part, right? For those of you who don't know, Zen robes are about four layers thick and lots of fabric and very, very hot in 105 degree heat. I very quickly figured out that's not happening. And because the nature of my experience was such that, yeah, I cannot wear five layers of clothes and survive. And I was having a conversation with my mom about this, and she said, well, I remember when you were a kid, you like, you know, you would be gone all day in the sun and running around. And, you know, we always had to like, you always got at least one second degree sunburn, if not two or three throughout the summer. You love the heat. I don't understand. And I said, I was a child. I'm not that anymore. So how do we cultivate curiosity? How do we live in such a way that we're not so convinced about the ideas that we have about ourselves, about our world, about all of it? You know, if you had told me when I was 20 that I would be a Zen monk, I would have thought that you were smoking some really good stuff, because that was not who, like, I couldn't relate to that idea at the age of 20, right? I'd come from a pretty abusive religious background. And so the idea of being involved in another religion of any kind was ridiculous to me. And even when I started to practice, I really was like, no, I want the things the Buddha said, and I want to sit meditation, but none of that other stuff. None of those bells and whistles. In 1995, I actually went to San Francisco Zen Center with a friend of mine to hear a talk. And I left there in a panic because of all the bells and whistles, right? Like the incense and the bowing and the priest, all of it. So much stuff. So much so that when I met my teacher and we started talking and stuff, I said to him, like, I'm happy to have you help me find a sangha, but it's not going to be Zen because y'all do too much. It's all just too much. And now look at me. But if I had stayed convinced about the things I knew about my own trauma, even, and how to heal that trauma, even, I never could imagine being able to do the things that I get to do today. I love my life and my practice. I love that I get to sit and talk with people and help them find themselves in their practice. It's amazing. I love that I can sit now with people as they're dying, or with families as someone in their family is dying, and together we can figure out how to practice in these moments of intense emotionality and intense experiences. And yet we can still be here in these places. And a lot of that is because I continue to sort of find it funny when I think the secret to Zen is two words. Not always so. When I can be really curious about whether or not I really believe that thing that just came out of my mouth. Just because I read it in a book somewhere. Or some sutra said X, Y, or Z. So it must be true, right? Maybe. Maybe not. And maybe it's not true for me, but it could be true for someone else. Because see, that's the other thing that happens when you cultivate this curiosity, when you start to ask yourself, what's underneath my stories and ideas and judgments and opinions and all of those things, and you start to look underneath all of it, and you're not so convinced by your own bullshit, you don't have to be convinced by anyone else's either. So you can allow people to be expansive. You can be there and not be thrown off by people deciding new things about themselves or new things for themselves. And just be like, oh, that's awesome. Cool. Great. Let's do that. Right? Because I don't have to be convinced about who you are any more than I need to be convinced about who I am. Which is why I really love this idea that Merwin brings forth in this poem. It extends beyond whatever I may think I know and all that is real to me. It is the present that it bears away. Where has it gone when it has gone from me? There's no place I know outside today, except for the unknown all around me. And every time that we get to sit on the cushion, we can begin to peel back those layers and really look at, what's it like to be me? What do I really believe? Just because a teacher told it to me, does it mean it's true? Well, that guy Digon said this thing the other day, and I'm not so sure it was right. Okay. My need to be right. Well, I'd like to say it doesn't exist, but no, there are lots of times when I want to be right. And then I get reminded that it's really a fool's game trying to be right. I think real healing comes when we are way more interested in being at ease. It's way more healing when we can let go of the need to be right and just be. The Buddha is said to have said, as he was passing into parinirvana, that the Dharma is what's most important. The truth is what's most important. So then we get to ask ourselves repeatedly over and over and over again, what's the truth? And why is it true? I want to leave lots of space for people to bring their ideas. So I'll read the poem once again and then invite you, because I'm a big firm believer in shared wisdom, that when we gather together, I believe in the ordinary day that is here at this moment and is new. I do not see it going its own way, but I never saw how it came to me. It extends beyond whatever I may think I know and all that is real to me. It is the present that it bears away. Where has it gone when it has gone from me? There is no place I know outside today, except for the unknown all around me. The only presence that appears to stay, everything I call mine is lent me, even the way that I believe the day, for as long as it is here and is me. So thank you very much for your practice. Thank you very much for being here. Thank you for bringing your wisdom in.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.